They're called that not for their color, but because they're forbidden. Make no mistake of what that spell was, or that you composed it. I stare at her. I brought you back. Like that day I made it snow in the Echo Wood. I was thinking of snow while I was composing, only I didn't know I was composing. And when I made all the leaves fly around, I was actually thinking about you. About how I'd give anything to just talk to you, even for a moment. I remember it with perfect clarity. How I'd imagined my mom then, exactly as I see her now. In her graduation gown, with her maestro's pin. And somehow, I summoned her exactly as I'd pictured her. She nods. You pulled me right through the veil between life and death. I tried to talk to you then. Oh, how I tried to hold you. But I was too weak, too thin. It was all I could do just to watch you, while you had no idea I was there. I look down at her ghostly pale hands in mine. They're still a bit see-through. My fingers are visible through hers. But why like this? Why couldn't I bring you back, you know, all the way? Her hands tighten on mine. Amelia, you must never try that. Not ever. Do you hear me? But why? My heart leaps around, singing with a hope I never even dared imagine possible. Mom, if I could really bring you back, Amelia, no. She sounds like Gran when she says it. Summoning the ghost of the dead is one thing. Bringing them back to life is another. It's beyond dangerous. It's twisted. And it always has terrible consequences. But you don't know that. If I could summon you here, I could do anything. Mom, I have to try. I have to. I do know, Amelia. I do. She sinks down to the ground, her form flickering. I drop with her, refusing to let go of her hands. We face one another on our knees, Mom's eyes squeezing shut. I know better than anyone the cost of such magic. Mom? What do you mean? Her eyes open, then slowly lift to meet mine. Because, Amelia, she says, I brought you back, and I paid for it with my life. Something opens inside of me, a big black hole. It swirls with dark clouds, flashes with understanding. At the bottom, a memory. Black water, strong current, dark river. My breath gone, all light gone, my parents gone, me gone. The memory has been with me all along, lurking deep in my mind. It darted out from hiding the day Phoebe threw me in the lake, and again in the little practice room when Miss Nurani tested me with illusions. So much has happened since then I'd almost forgotten about it. Somehow, I knew, but I just couldn't believe. Amelia, listen to me very carefully, Mom says, and it's like she's talking from a great distance away. When you were little, we would go camping, you and me and your father. We had a favorite spot by a river, but that night it rained. It rained so hard the river rose. Our tent flooded. Your father and I were packing everything into the car so we could drive home, and then you were gone. You toddled off to the water, and it just snatched you up. Her voice shakes. Her hands tremble in mine. We found you downriver, but it was too late. You were... She stops, her eyes closing, tears like ghostly pearls running down her cheeks. Your father ran to get help, but I couldn't give up yet. I still had my flute. She lets go of my hands to pick up the instrument, which still lies in the dirt where I dropped it. She holds it in her palms lovingly. I was a composer too, Amelia. I press my hands to my lips, murmuring, You brought me back. She nods, raising the flute to her chest, fingers knotted around it. I composed a resurrection spell, and right before my eyes, you sucked in a breath and your eyes opened. But magic like that is very hard to control. The spell went wild until I was no longer playing it. It was playing me. That's what can happen when you compose something too big. Composing is driven by weaving your willpower into your notes, which means you have to concentrate fully and completely on the thing you want your magic to do. You must want it with your whole being, with a perfect purity of focus. But if your focus wavers even a little, because of fear or doubt or anger, then the magic takes control of you, and it consumes you. Do you hear? When I composed that spell by the river, I had just a seed of doubt in my heart, just enough fear that it wouldn't work. And that's why it backfired on me, even as it saved you. Her words frighten me. The magic she's talking about, it's so big, so powerful, so beyond anything I can understand. So I nod, and her face relaxes. She pulls me into another hug. I missed you, I whisper. I can't lose you again. Oh, Amelia. She kisses my hair over and over. You never lost me. I've always been with you, tucked between the notes you played, hidden behind your measures and scales and arpeggios. That is how you remember me, and that is how I remain a part of you. But I can't stay with you like this. I don't belong to this world anymore. And even if I tried, for as long as I remain here, other things can get in too. Other things. Do you mean those other ghosts? Just so, my love. When you opened that doorway 3 months ago, it was just big enough for me to slip through. A door opened. But by leaving your spell unfinished, you also left a powerful amount of magic uncontrolled. A door that continued to open, wider and wider. And that loose magic has been tethered to you all this time, following you wherever you went, getting more unstable. She pulls back, raising her hands to frame my face. Her eyes are silvery as the moon. That's what I've been trying to warn you about. I knew it was only a matter of time before the veil between life and death broke altogether, and the others would escape through the spell you created. I'd hoped you could stop it before it went this far. I suck in a breath as understanding floods through me. I thought you were someone else, someone trying to sabotage me, but you were trying to talk to me. I needed you to embrace the part of you that is most powerful, the part of you driven by your instinct and your belief. My composing, I whisper. Thinking back to all the times she blew away my music sheets or interfered with my playing, it now makes sense. She was trying to tell me I didn't need the music, that I could make my own. She was trying to get me to stop following the notes on the page so I could listen to the notes inside. That day you wrote on the whiteboard, I say, you spelled poser. Come, poser, she replies. If you had let me finish, anyway. And the message in the soup telling me to watch out. It was supposed to say, watch out, there are a bunch of ghosts coming. Or something like that. She pauses, wincing. I ran out of soup. You were trying to help me all along. It wasn't easy. I was so weak, and every time I tried to reach you, I only got weaker. But tonight's Halloween, the night when the wall between the living and the dead is at its thinnest. That's why I'm able to talk to you now, when I couldn't for all those months. It's why I can hold you. But it's also the perfect time for those others to break through. Those ghosts, Amelia. They're the worst of the worst. They're the spirits of people who have scores to settle in this world, who want to seek out revenge on people they once knew and wreak havoc on countless lives for no other reason than that it makes them feel a little bit alive again. And they'll do anything to stay in this world, even if it means destroying the school and everyone in it so you can't send them back. They know that a musician powerful enough to release them is also powerful enough to banish them again. My stomach lurches. We have to stop them. You have to stop them, she replies. It's your spell, Amelia. You decide what it does. Do you remember the second rule of music craft? Lest you be doomed by your own art, always finish what you start. I have to finish the spell, I whisper. In my treehouse that day, I'd broken off playing because I'd been so surprised by the magic I'd created. Which means all this time, just like Mrs. LaRue had warned, that magic has been hanging around, getting more and more unstable. My mom knew, and she was trying to tell me. And I have to focus on what I want that spell to be. That's how composing works. Like you said, and like Jai tried to tell me, weaving my willpower into music. What had they called it? Purity of focus. Mom nods. You must not only finish it, but decide how you will finish it. Close the spell. Tie up all that loose magic. A bubble of hope rises inside me, then bursts. But I can't compose whenever I want. I'm not like you. I can only do it by accident. Groaning, I let my face sink into my hands. I screwed up the biggest audition of my life. I fail even when I play every note exactly right. I'm not like the other kids here, or the other Amelia. She was the real musician. I'm not even like you. But Mom smiles. Exactly. Because you're you, Amelia. Something special and unique and powerful. But your magic will only ever be as strong as your belief in yourself. That is the only way you can save your friends and your school and make things right. She holds the flute toward me. It's time for you to decide. Who is the real Amelia Jones? I stare at the flute. It seems to glow in the ghostly light she casts. Ever since she was taken from me, I've longed to talk to her and ask her what I should do. And now she's telling me. But the strength to do this has to come from me, not her. My magic is only as strong as my belief. My hands shake. My heart beats like a drum. All I've wanted was a chance to prove I could do it. To her, to Gran, to the maestros and all the students. But now I realize the only person I ever needed to prove myself to was me. Drawing a deep breath, I look my mother in the eye and give her a nod. I reach out and take back the flute. Chapter 28, The Music Inside. When Mom and I reached the lake just minutes later, I let out a gasp of horror. More ghosts have poured through the rip in the middle of the tornado. Where there had been a dozen, now there are too many to count. They fly in thick flocks, like enormous dark crows, screeching and hammering at windows and doors. Their faces are horrible, twisted masks, with hollow eyes and wide, empty mouths, as if years of raging against their fates has erased their old identities completely, transforming them into monsters. Only Mom seems human still, and she watches the other ghosts with sad eyes. I see shimmers of magic and realize the students inside the buildings must be playing repelling spells to keep the ghosts from getting in. The maestros are still lying on the ground, paralyzed, and it's starting to rain harder. I wrap my flute in my coat to protect it, which leaves me shivering. Hearing a shatter of glass to my left, I turn to see a ghost has broken through a window in the boys' dorm. A dozen of the silvery figures swoop inside, and screams sound within. I guess someone must have hit the wrong note in their repelling spell. There are too many! I shout over the tornado's roar. Mom grabs my hand. Only you can stop them, she shouts back. You have to complete the spell. I stop and shake my head, pulling away. I need one thing first. Running back down the hill, I grab Mrs. LaRue by the hand. I wonder if she even knows what's going on. I'm sorry, I say to her, even though she gives no indication she can hear me. This is all my fault. I can fix it, I think, but I need to borrow this. I pull something from her pocket, then sprint back up the hill to Harmony Hall, stumbling on the wet grass, and pound on the front door. Mom watches my back, keeping away any ghosts who might decide to take a dive at me. Let me in, I yell. It's me, Amelia. The door cracks open and Rosa peers through. When she sees my mom, she snarls and starts to slam the door shut. No, I shout. She's with me. She's a ghost. Suddenly, Darby is there, yanking the door open. Amelia? She says, eyes wide. My? Amelia, is that you? My mom leans close and whispers, I'll wait outside. Just remember, listen to the music inside of you, Amelia. I nod and squeeze her hand before she drifts away, hoping it's not the last chance I'll have to speak with her. I'm trying very hard not to think about the fact that by saving the school, I'll have to lose her again. I worry if I think about it too much, I'll change my mind. I love my mom with all my heart, but she's not mine to save. The school and all its students and teachers, however, just might be. The rest of the Rebel Clef band stands in the great foyer, with Jai and a bunch of other seventh graders. The other students must be holed up in the dorms and gym. Most are holding instruments at the ready, looking unsure whether they should play something. The few seniors are playing a repelling spell, stationed at the windows. There aren't any adults in sight. I see Darby watching me with burning eyes.
"That was the ghost who chased you," she whispers.
I nod.
"She's not Amelia."
"I'm sorry, Darby. It was my mom. I'm sorry it wasn't your friend, but I need your help now. I know the spell that will stop the ghosts, but I can't play it alone." I turn to the others, raising my voice. "My flute won't be enough. The sound of the tornado will drown me out. We need an orchestra, as many students as we can gather. Then we have to go outside and finish this."
"If the maestros couldn't stop this, how could we?" Jai asks.
I draw a deep breath, then say, "Because the spell that let those ghosts into the school? It's mine. I composed it." Claudia shoulders through the others.
"You're a composer? That's ridiculous. You're delusional. The real Amelia. I am the real Amelia."
I don't realize how loudly I shouted it until I see all the students in the room are staring at me. For a moment, I want to run away and hide from all those stares. An hour ago, I was ready to do just that. I was ready to give up. But not anymore. Because I am the real Amelia Jones. I always was. Somewhere along the way, even before coming to Mistwick, I lost myself. I tried too hard to become someone I wasn't, the perfect model musician. I tried to be the other Amelia, or my mom, when instead, I should have done what my mom has been trying to tell me to do all along. Listen to the music inside, because that's my strength. That's what makes me real. And it just might be what saves Mistwick. "Darby," I say, letting out a long breath. "I'm sorry your friend died. It wasn't fair. She should be here. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't. I'm here now, and I'm asking for your help." She's glaring at me, her eyes wet with unshed tears.
"You want my help?"
I nod. "I need you to conduct." I hand her the baton I plucked from Mrs. LaRue's pocket. She stares at it like it's a snake. "Please?" I wrap her hand around the baton. "I need you, Darby. Only you can lead us through this spell. I know the notes, but I need someone to weave them together." Every moment we waste arguing, more ghosts escape the terror. If we wait much longer, they might be too strong and too many for us to repel. Darby glares back at me. I can see her at war with herself, and I'm not at all sure she's going to help. But I have to ask, because it's true. I need her. I need all of them. Finally, Darby looks down at the baton, her face crumpling.
I don't know. The last time I tried, you remember, I totally failed.
You're the most fearless person I know, I say. But your magic is only as strong as your belief. Well, I believe in you, Darby Bradshaw. Do you? Her fist tightens around the baton. Well, I ask, do you? She looks up, a spark igniting in her eyes.
I'll do it, she whispers.
I wrap my hand around hers. What's that? I can't quite hear you. She gives a weak grin.
I can do it.
Leaning forward until our noses are inches apart, I say through my teeth, I can't hear you. Darby throws back her head and yells at the top of her lungs, I can do it.
Everyone, get into marching formation.
Students grab instruments, tuning up, jumping in place, moving toward the doors. Darby sticks to my side, holding her baton like it's a sword. She suddenly seems like a totally different person. Not the Darby who hung out in the back of the classroom every day, staying quiet and avoiding everyone. Now she shouts orders, and even the seniors listen to her, everyone falling into neat lines and readying their instruments. I find myself standing just in front of Jai, and with a deep breath, I turn around to face him. I was wrong, I say, before he can avoid my gaze. I was stupid and mean and wrong. You're not a coward, Jai, but you are a good friend, a better one than I deserved. He looks down at his violin, his thumb rubbing the E string. You were right, actually. I am too scared to tell my dad how I feel. And I pushed you the way he's always pushed me. And I hate when he does that. I should have known better. Well, maybe I needed pushing. I was just so scared of messing up, I couldn't even try. Your magic is only as strong as your belief, Amelia Grace Jones. I blink. You guessed it. You actually guessed it. He laughs. Nah. I just peeked at your student file when Mr. P left it on his desk during detention one day. Kapoor, snaps Darby. Would you shut up already? It's time to kick some ghost butt. Jai whoops and waves his violin over his head. Hey, everyone! What are we gonna kick? Ghost butt, we scream. What are we gonna kick? Ghost butt! Blocking spell, calls Darby. Beethoven's Fifth, first movement. On my count. One and two and... We fall into two lines and strike up the powerful spell. Golden light explodes from our instruments and spreads overhead, then down to the ground, forming a glittering shell around us all. We parade through the front doors of Harmony Hall, almost the entire seventh grade class and a few older kids, our spell ringing out. Even the cellists and bassists walk with the rest of us, their huge instruments strapped to them in marching harnesses. The drummer from Rebel Clef pushes Victoria's wheelchair, while she adds powerful guitar riffs to the spell. We're not the most organized marching orchestra in the history of musicraft, but we just might be the loudest. I spot my mom nearby, and she raises her hands together to give me a little victory cheer. I nod back, keeping my flute pressed to my chin. Above me, the rain hits our shield and slides down, so we seem to walk in a moving dome of water. All around, the other students play with all their might, the cordos taking the melody, and everyone else filling in the harmonies and counter-melodies. It helps that we've been practicing this particular spell in orchestra for the last 2 months. I wonder if anyone could have guessed it might one day save us all. For the first time, I really do feel like I belong with them. I play as loudly as anyone, my fingers moving with a grace and surety I didn't know I had. But it's quickly clear that this is not going to be easy. The tornado twists and writhes, ghosts swirling from its depths and diving at us. The storm is worse than ever, with thunder cracking and rolling, while lightning streaks from east to west. Behind Harmony Hall, the echo trees whip around like they've been caught up in a frenzy spell. The ghosts who swoop our way bounce off the ward and flee, screeching in rage. It's like walking under a giant transparent turtle shell veined with gold. Where the ghosts hit, shimmering dust rains down on our heads. But the ward holds strong, and my mother floats beside me, a few steps away. Separated by the glowing barrier, but sticking as close as she can. It's working, Jai shouts, scraping furiously at his violin. Don't stop! Darby walks backwards down the hill, flicking the baton, eyes focused and jaw tight. When we reach the water's edge, she stands on the dock and faces us. Behind her, the tornado writhes, churning up the lake's flooded waters. She looks tiny with that thing looming behind her. This close, I can see the edges of the rip fluttering like cloth. The depths are black and shadowy. But worse, as I lower my flute to catch my breath, I can see the tear inside the tornado is getting wider.
The spell I began months ago is bigger and stronger than I could have ever imagined. More and more ghosts are finding their way out, shrieking with delight as they see the world of the living open to them at last. I remember what my mom said about these ones being the worst of the worst, and what they'll do to stay in this world they don't belong in. We have to make this work. I have to make this work. Or Mystrick and the Maestros and all these students will pay the price. This isn't about me anymore. It's not about proving myself or earning my place here. If I fail now, there won't even be a here. Darby has us finish the blocking spell, and the students fall silent. The ward remains in place, but soon it will fade away and leave us all exposed to the ghosts and rain, so I don't have long. Everyone else looks as scared as I am, but nobody breaks. They await Darby's instructions. "Ready?" Darby asks me. "Ready." I raise my flute, inhaling deeply. "Okay, Amelia," she says. "What's the spell?" I stand beside her and start to play the tune I invented months ago. At first, I'd worried I wouldn't be able to remember it, but it comes to me as freshly as if I were still lying in my treehouse. I played then with the fear that I'd never even see this school. Now, I play with the hope of saving it. The melody is simple and sad, filled with longing. I know now that it's my love for my mother spun into sound. All my heartache and wishfulness and regret pouring from me into my flute, turning to magic. Each note feels like a piece of me, raw and real, unwinding from my heart. It's like letting everyone look straight into my soul. I feel more exposed than I ever have before. And I also feel more powerful than I ever have before. I run through the melody twice, and then Darby turns to the other students and signals for them to get ready. They stand with instruments poised, as around us, the ghosts gather and thicken, as if preparing for a full, organized assault. Their hollow eyes gape at us, and their ghostly instruments screech and howl. They know our ward is weakening, and they're waiting for the moment to strike. Jai is first to jump in, picking up the melody with his violin. Rosa and her saxophone join next, and then Claudia and George and Victoria and Rabia and the rest of Rebelclef. As the students begin to play, one by one joining in with my flute, our sound slowly drowns out the ghosts. Then everyone is playing, following the melody or adding their own harmonies, and Darby conducts it all, her baton flicking to keep tempo, her free hand reaching out to call for more from certain players. I don't know how she does it, keeping track of each instrument and its musician, weaving us all together, making my simple spell into something grand and intricate and beautiful. These kids really are the best in the world. Who else could hear a melody two times and then turn it into a symphony with no practice at all? Not that every note is perfect. I hear a few that make me wince. But the nice thing about playing in an orchestra is that there's always someone to cover for you. The ghosts seem taken aback. They aren't sure what we're doing, and some start to pull away worriedly. Before, the maestros weren't able to join together in force against them, and so they became easy targets. But altogether, our student orchestra is too strong for them. My spell becomes our spell. And our united sound is more powerful than anything I could ever play on my own. But I am still its composer, and I must decide how this spell will end. Go, I think. But it is only one ghost I think of. I'm letting you go. And even though it feels like I'm telling my own heart to crawl out of my chest, I focus everything in me on the words and on the music. And I know, at last, what it means to compose. I take the reins of my wayward magic and pull it back under control, this spell of my own making. A spell to summon the spirit of a lost soul and then release them to their rest. Go. Rainbow-colored threads coil upward from my flute to join with the magic flowing from everyone else. Yellow and green and blue and purple all twist together, glittering and brighter than any shades I've ever seen.
A great stream of it swirls to the tornado, like thread feeding a spool. The dark clouds and water begin to glow as our magic weaves through it all. Black spells aren't black at all, just like Mom said, but every color at once. More beautiful than I could have imagined. Finally, the tear starts to close, threads of magic knitting the seam together. The ghosts start wailing as the tornado begins sucking them inward. All around us, silvery forms flow through the air and disappear into the shadow inside the funnel. They vanish into the tear and back into whatever afterlife awaits. But what about my mom? I turn and see her watching me. Since the rest of the students are going strong with my melody now, I am able to lower my flute for a few moments. I stop closer to Mom so I can hear her over the music. "Your spell is strong, my love," she says, her voice slightly warped by the ward between us. "It's working, but that means I have to go." I raise a hand, pressing it to the barrier, aching because I can't touch her. "Maybe there's a way," I whisper. "If you just hold on to me..." "The tear can't close until I'm on the other side," she replies. "But don't worry about me. A part of me will stay here with you, as it always has. You must stay strong. Maintain your focus, Amelia, or the spell will backfire. Be strong, my love. Don't worry. Don't be afraid." But I still have so many questions, especially about... I didn't think I cared, but I think maybe I do. "My dad... Amelia!" Darby is calling my name. I glance back to see her waving her baton at me, needing me to rejoin the others. But I can't. I have to ask Mom. But when I turn back, she is gone. And only her last whisper hangs in my memory. "Don't be afraid." I look around, then spot her, growing smaller and thinner as she soars back to the rift. She presses her hands to her lips, then extends them toward me, a final kiss, as she joins the river of ghosts streaming back to the crack between life and death. She grows fainter and fainter, and then she is gone. Again. And it feels like my heart has been ripped from my chest. "Amelia!" Darby is growing frantic. Trembling, I turn around and raise my flute. I feel like I'm going to crumble apart, but I have to finish this. So with all my might, I focus on my music, though it's kind of hard to see because of the tears in my eyes. I can feel the melody reaching its conclusion, but I don't rush it. I think that's why I always messed up before, when I tried to compose consciously. I was trying too hard to control the music flowing out of me, when instead, I needed to listen. The tornado is getting smaller and smaller. The roar of the wind is dying. Overhead, clouds are starting to thin and scatter. The rain stops at last. One by one, the other students drop away, lowering their instruments at Darby's command, until the only sound left is my flute's silver tones. Magic curls from it, scarlet and violet and golden, every color there is, to drift through the air and then fade. I play through a slow measure, then another, and finally, I hold the final note until my lungs feel empty. Then, lowering my instrument, I watch as the tornado dissolves and the water it had drawn out of the lake begins to rain around us. For a full minute, that rain falls, until at last, the sky clears. The lake is still and silent. Stars dazzle overhead. Not a wisp of wind remains to ruffle the grass. And behind me, everyone breaks into a loud cheer. A few rush to help the bewildered maestros off the ground, and Rosa and Claudia help Victoria, whose wheels are stuck in the mud. The others surround Darby and me and lift us up. Phoebe and the drummer from Rebel Clef have me on their shoulders, parading me around like some kind of hero. Darby catches my eye, and we exchange a look that, call me crazy, is almost friendly. Our celebration doesn't last long, though. The maestros pick up their dropped instruments, most of which are no doubt ruined, but at least they're alive. The students fall quiet as they approach, and the seniors set me down. Everyone parts from Mrs. LaRue, who manages to look serene as ever despite her windblown hair and soaking clothes. She walks through the crowd of students until she reaches me. Amelia Jones. She gives me an odd look, like she can't figure me out. We need to talk. Chapter 29. Overture and Out. It's barely dawn, everything washed in thin gray light. The joints of my flute slide together with soft clicks, the smooth barrel so familiar to me it's like an extension of my arm. I press the keys a few times, loosening my fingers, and take a deep breath. Crouched in the grass, I get dewdrops all over my jeans and think it's lucky I wore my beat-up old boots because I'd be slipping all over the wet ground if I were still in those horrible, pinching, tight uniform shoes. Those are deep under my bed again, right where they belong. Standing up, I look at Mrs. LaRue. She gives me a single nod, not looking the least bit bothered by my ugly old boots. The other four maestros stand in a row beside her, and for a minute, I get a terrible wave of déjà vu. It's all so similar to 2 nights ago, and my first test with its disastrous result. After the storm, Mrs. LaRue had taken me not to her office, but to her own private rooms in Harmony Hall. There, in a cozy chair by a crackling fire, with Wink curled on my lap, I'd told her everything. About my composing, my initial fear that other Amelia was haunting me, and how the ghost had turned out to be my mom. The headmaestro had listened, asked a few soft questions, then fallen silent for a long while. I had no idea what would happen next. Would I be expelled, punished, barred from music craft altogether? Instead, she'd surprised me with another option entirely, the chance to redo my test. Jai was mad when he found out. They're testing you again, after you just saved the whole school. They should be handing you the key to Harmony Hall. I pointed out that it was me who put the school in danger in the first place, and I did play a black spell, which is kind of illegal. Who cares? He waved a hand. They can't send you home, Amelia. They know you're a composer now. Looking down at my echo tree with the maestro standing around me, I pause and consider. Do I try composing a spell and risk ruining this if I mess up? I know I'll never get another chance. Mrs. LaRue still doesn't tell me what she expects. She just waits for me to play. It's another riddle, another shot in the dark. Or is it? I stare hard at the tree, my spirit rebelling. I'm tired of playing games with them, of trying to guess what they want, who they want. I couldn't be the other Amelia for them, and I couldn't be the perfect Mistwick student. I can only be myself. So that's who I decide to play for. Not for Mrs. LaRue, or Mr. Pinwhistle, or Miss Nurani. For Amelia Jones. Me. I compose a short green spell, with a quick tempo and a major key. Instead of watching my fingers to be sure I hit the right notes, instead of watching the tree to be sure the spell is working, I close my eyes and trust the music inside. When the spell is over, I lower my flute before opening my eyes. I wait a moment, knowing the risk I took was huge, and likely will cost me my dream of Mistwick forever. But this time, if I fail, I'll know I truly gave it my all. When I open my eyes, I see my echo tree leaning crookedly in front of me, bent at that awkward angle, imperfect once more. It's out of place, it's weird, and it's real. Not a copy of any other tree in the whole forest. Just completely itself. I smile at the tree. Then finally look up at Mrs. LaRue. She's smiling too. Amelia Jones, she says. Welcome to Mistwick. I catch Miss Nurani before she follows the others into Harmony Hall. We're standing on the front steps, overlooking the glimmering lake. Beams of sunlight stream through the trees and glint on the water's gentle waves. Hard to imagine that less than 2 days ago, that lake was a swirling funnel open to the land of the dead. Right now, it looks as peaceful as a painting. "Is this real?" I ask her. She laughs.
"Go back to the Echo Wood later today and look at all those trees. Look closely."
She raises her finger, as if letting me in on a great secret.
"They may look perfect, but once you get close, you'll see each one has its flaws. Its crooked branches, its awkward knots, its lumpy bits. We never wanted a perfect musician in you, Amelia. We wanted an authentic one. Someone unafraid to be herself, even if that meant risking everything. Because that's what music craft is really about, finding your own voice and being brave enough to use it."
Embarrassed, I look down at my shoes. I guess it took me a while to figure that out.
"Amelia,"
she continues,
"you're a composer. That's no small thing, and we're lucky to have you here. We'll begin searching for a maestro to instruct you. Unfortunately, none of us here has the gift, but don't worry. We'll make sure you learn how to use this skill, so nothing like this ever happens again."
"Thanks," I mutter, but it's an inadequate word for what I feel. My own maestro to train me in composing? It's more than I could have dreamed. But there's still something I have to say to Miss Nurani. I try to find the right words. "That first test, before the storm happened, I know it was you who voted for me against the others. I wanted to say thank you." Her eyebrows arch up, and she looks surprised.
"Oh, Amelia, as much as I hate to admit it, I wasn't the one who voted for you."
"What?" She smiles, patting my hand and then pointing down toward the lake, where a lone figure stands on the dock.
"He was."
I blink hard, sure she's pulling my leg. "Mr. Pinwhistle?"
"I know he's a grouch, but really, he's one of the best teachers here at Mistwick. Mr. Pinwhistle is one of those special people who sees not how good you are, but how good you could be. And then he pushes and prods and aggravates you until you reach the potential he sees in you."
"I thought he hated my guts."
"Yes, I imagine he's been a bit of a beast,"
she chuckles.
"But now you know it's not because he hated you."
"He believed in me." When everyone else had written me off, there was Mr. P, fighting to keep me at Mistwick. I don't think I'd have been more surprised if she'd told me it was a humfrog who'd voted on my behalf. Miss Nurani pats my shoulder.
"But Amelia."
"Yes?" She sweeps her hand, gesturing at the mess around us. The storm has left debris all over the grounds. Leaves, sticks, plants torn up by the roots, broken glass and trash blown out of bins, all scattered around the lake.
"You're not totally off the hook."
All things considered, getting stuck with groundskeeping duties is a pretty light sentence, even if I'm not allowed to use magic to do it. After breakfast, I head out with work gloves and a wheelbarrow to start on the mess. Looking around, I sigh, realizing it's going to take days to get the grounds back to normal. But it's a small price to pay for staying at Mistwick. I start by the girls' dorm, picking up sticks and cracking them in half before tossing them into the wheelbarrow. Soon I get lost in the work, and it's much nicer than transposing homework.
"It'd go faster if you didn't crack the sticks before throwing them away," a voice points out.
I spin around. Jai. He's standing with his own set of gloves and wheelbarrow. He grins.
"Did you think I'd let you have all the fun? I mean, groundswork? Hello? It's the best. Gives me a chance to show off these."
He flexes his skinny arms. I laugh. "Yeah, keep that up and you'll pop those balloons you call muscles." Then I see six more students walking up with wheelbarrows, gloves, and rakes. All are seventh grade arrows, including George and Claudia and Colin. Seeing me stare, they just shrug.
"The storm knocked out the internet," George says. "No computer lab until it's fixed, and classes are postponed until the afternoon. What else are we going to do? Study?"
We all laugh like he told the world's biggest joke. The sun rises higher. It's the warmest day we've had all month. I toss my jacket aside and work in my I'll be Bach t-shirt. Good thing chicken poop washes out. It's my favorite shirt. There's a fallen branch jammed in a pear tree at the corner of the gym, and I struggle to pull it loose. Instead, it breaks in half and I topple backwards, landing hard on my butt. Need help? Someone asks. I slowly turn around. Sure, I can't be hearing right. Darby rolls her eyes and steps around me. With her height, she easily dislodges the branch and tosses it in the wheelbarrow.
Honestly, does it suck being so short all the time?
With a grin, I take the hand she holds out, letting her pull me to my feet. Does it suck being so tall that everyone thinks you're in 10th grade?
Actually, it's kind of awesome.
We stand awkwardly for a moment. Then Darby blurts out,
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have treated you the way I did or blamed you for things way out of your control.
I shake my head. You don't have to apologize, really. We've both had a rough time lately. She pulls off a glove and holds out her hand.
I guess we're even then.
I grab her hand and shake it. Even. She coughs and puts her hands in her pocket, looking suddenly shy.
So, Phoebe told me if we still want to change rooms, we can do it over winter break.
Oh. I look down, wincing. So,
I figured it's just a lot of work to change rooms, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who can sleep through your snoring, so.
I don't snore. But I start to giggle. Okay. Out of the goodness of my heart, I'll let you be my roommate in the spring, Hamako Bradshaw. But only because I'm lazy and don't want to move.
Right. And only because I'm too selfless to inflict you on any other poor girl.
You really are a saint.
Yeah, well, all I can say is they better put a statue of me down by the lake. I did kind of save the whole school.
You did?
You said it yourself. You couldn't have done it without me.
Impulsively, I step forward and hug her. After a moment's surprise, Darby hugs me back.
Oh, and Miss March asked me to pass on a message. She says, when you're done cleaning up, she needs you to clear out your mailbox. Apparently, it's overflowing.
My what? I look at her blankly. Darby gives me an odd look.
Your mailbox. Where you get your mail. In the back of Harmony Hall. You didn't know about it?
Nobody told me I had a mailbox. I bet it was announced the very first day, when all the new students had arrived, but I was up in the headmaestro's office, finding out I was never supposed to be at Mistwick in the first place. I don't even have a key for one.
Do you have your whistle key?
Well, yeah, I reply, taking it from my pocket, but...
Give it here, dummy.
Darby grabs my key and twists it, and to my shock, the holes realign to form a new sequence of notes. She hands it back to me, and I twist it back and forth, my mouth hanging open.
You mean you haven't checked it even once? She says. You've probably got 40 million letters in...
But I'm already running away, ignoring the branches and leaves I'm supposed to be cleaning up. I run as fast as I can to Harmony Hall, where I finally stop to ask a senior where the mailboxes are. She looks at me like I asked where the sky is and points to a hallway. Racing down it, realizing I've definitely never been back here before, I can feel my heart pounding. Skidding to a halt in a room lined with little mailboxes, just like in the post office back home, my eyes fix on one with my name on it in gleaming gold letters. I twist my whistle key so that the second set of notes is ready, then play them in quick succession. F, F sharp, B. The mailbox bursts open at once, and a torrent of letters falls out. I stumble back and stare at the envelopes piling up on the floor. It takes a while. The last one, bigger than the rest, lands with a little thunk. They're from Gran. They're all from Gran. She must have written almost every single day since I've been gone. And all this time, I thought she was ignoring me on purpose. Sorting through the pile, I find the envelope with the earliest date on it and rip it open. The letter inside is full of the kinds of things I'd expect. Gran asking if I remembered my shampoo, if I liked my roommate, if the food had enough fresh veggies in it. But the last line catches my eye. P.S. There's no use in emailing me, as I have forgotten my password. My stomach sinks. All this time I was emailing Gran, and all this time she was writing to me, and neither of us knew it. She must think I was ignoring her. Amelia? I turn around and see Miss March staring at my pile of letters in astonishment. Is it okay? I stop and have to swallow, because I realize I'm on the verge of bursting into tears. Can I have the morning off from cleaning? I swear I'll get it all done after. It's fine, she says gently. Let me get you a bag for all this. Minutes later, I walk out of the mailroom hauling my bag of envelopes. It'll take hours to read all of Gran's letters, and then I know I have to do what I've been putting off for weeks. I have to call her and tell her the truth. The whole truth. One envelope I keep in my hand. It was sent just last week, and it's the one that was heavier than all the rest. There's some kind of little box inside it. I rip it open as I walk back through Harmony Hall. In the lobby, a few older students are lounging on the sofas and rugs, glued to a news story on the TV about some castaways being rescued from a tropical island. Wait a minute, says one of the kids. I know those people. Isn't that... Move, Guppy, calls out another, just as I walk by. You're blocking the screen. Sorry, I mutter, scurrying off as I unfold the letter. My dear Amelia, I suppose you're still upset with me for lying all these years about your mother, and I want you to know I understand, and that I will always love you, even when you don't wish to speak with me. I pause to wipe my eyes. No, Gran, that's not it at all. I have to explain everything to her. Wait till she hears I met my mother, that I got to hug her. Gran's letter continues. This was your mother's. I suppose it will do more good in your hands than it's done sitting in my jewelry box. She would have wanted you to have it. I expect in a few years you will have one of your own. But until then, perhaps this one will encourage you to always follow your heart, even when a stubborn old goat like me is too afraid to let you go. Love, your Gran. With a little gasp, I turn over the envelope, and a little jewelry box slides out into my palm. Inside it is a glittering gold music note, my mother's maestro pin. Heart pounding, I go back to my dorm room and spend the next 3 hours reading Gran's letters, my heart pinching every time she asks me why I haven't written back or called. The rest is mostly updates on our neighbor's vegetable gardens and Mrs. O'Grady's chickens, and how Gran's book club is feuding again over what to read next. In other words, all the normal, boring, wonderful stuff I've missed most about home. When I'm done with the letters, I carefully pin my mother's golden music note on the bulletin board over my desk. One day, not long from now, I will earn the right to wear it myself. If I work hard and practice often and always stay true to myself, then I can become anything, even a maestro. But for now, I grab my flute case and head for the door. As of today, I'm an official, no strings attached, honest to Bach student at the Mistwick School of Music Craft. I've got class to attend.
This has been an Audible Originals production of the Mistwick School of Music Craft. Written by Jessica Corey. Performed by Susie Jackson. Executive producers Elizabeth Scholar and Mike Charzik. Editorial producer Heather Alexander. Producer Joy Smith. Edited by Sarah Cosa Paglusa. Music producer and supervisor Jeff Dudzik. Original music composed for Audible by Nat Osborne. Music performed by members of the NJSO Youth Orchestras, a program of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. Jose Luis Dominguez, Artistic Director. Joanna Borowski, Director of Education. Additional music performed by Jeff Dudzik, Pat Hines, and Joanna Borowski. Music recorded by Jeff Dudzik, Pat Hines, John Dracy, and Darren Vermas. Music edited and mixed by Jeff Dudzik. Mastering by Pat Hines and Jeff Dudzik. Copyright 2019 by Jessica Corey. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.